BlackHawkTalk.com. Allie, nice to be with you again, sir.
Yes, you as well, Dwayne. It's great. And today we've been chatting for 20 minutes beforehand. I wish people could just hear our conversations. There's just so much that we talk about that would benefit school owners, you know?
Well, maybe we do behind the curtain sometime.
Yeah. You know what? It's interesting. I want to lead. We have a topic which you're going to talk about, lifetime value of a student, you know, come to income and what a student is worth in a monetary sense. But really, it's so interesting in how my life always wraps around things that are going on in, let's say, your world or other people's worlds where I'm suffering or dealing with or having to work out similar situations. It's almost like environmentally everyone is doing, going through the same cycle, you know, maybe because it's winter and people are feeling a certain way. But however, I had a student of mine who's a really great student, really good guy. I really, really care about him a lot. Dedicated student for up to period when he stopped training for recently. And I often talk about this word called giri. Giri in the Japanese martial arts is loyalty, I'm sure, because you do a Korean form of martial arts, right?
Yes, that's the base style anyways.
The base style. So I'm sure it's just the same exact thing, but a different word. And I wrote an article years ago about giri. Giri is that loyalty. And it's so cool because Stephen Hayes, Anshu Stephen Hayes, world-renowned, world-famous ninja master, who I highly respect, he wrote back to me when I wrote this article. He said, society is more of a gimme rather than a giri society. And I quoted him on that in this new article and the old article. Then I had another high-ranking master, really traditional karate guy from the early 60s. He wrote to me about giri. He said that, and his name is Master Pete Takali, phenomenal martial artist. He's had me on his TV show a few times. And he wrote, the description of giri, the explanation of giri is, with rank comes privilege, and some might understand with privilege comes responsibility. With responsibility comes duty, and duty evolves into a deep obligation which lays the foundation for the culmination of the word giri, or the action of giri. One might note that I have changed the English to Japanese. He's changed from English to Japanese, and he does so because the English word really has no way to properly translate giri and do it justice. In layman's terms, he would explain giri as a debt that you gladly accept, even with the knowledge that you will pay this debt until your last day. And on that day, you will learn and know that you haven't scratched the surface of paying enough. He said giri is what one might owe to their parents, to their grandparents, to their country, and that they honor their sensei. And then he wrote, as a footnote, I firmly believe that a sensei, part of our giri, is to teach those thousands, if necessary, to find the few students whom our giri can be entrusted and passed on to. So anyway, I keep saying giri, 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 just a Japanese word for loyalty, and I find it to be so interesting in our society at how we've become so commercialized and so straightforward and not realizing that there's such unbelievably ancient and antiquated moral values that are taught in our arts that are slowly dissolving and going away. So anyway, it leads into what a student is and why they have a value and why their value is not just money, but it also is about a lifestyle choice and the lessons that they learn. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that I love how you bring in the idea or really the understanding that it's not all about money. I mean, we need money to run our businesses. And, of course, you know, finding the lifetime value of a student gives you that monetary aspect to be able to help you run the business, but that there's more to it than that. And what I appreciate about that is, there was a time when I was really focused on the business so much that I just saw little dollar bills on the floor kicking and punching. And thank God at that time I had a head instructor that was really focused in on the students and I focused in on the business. So even though that was the wrong way to look at it, thankfully I had somebody else that was doing the right things on the floor, if that makes sense. So I really love how, and I don't do that now. I mean, of course I look at the numbers, But I don't see little dollar bills kicking and punching anymore. And when I first began, I didn't see that either.
Yeah, you know, and isn't that, and you know what, there is, and here, and there lies those traditionalists, or those, I'll say traditionalists, that use the word McDojo like it was going out of style. And I'm quite offended by that word, McDojo, because I realize that even if you're a traditionalist and charging a dollar a class, and or you're a non-traditionalist that's looking at the business side of it and charging $150 a class, either way, you're still commercial, right? So, yes, you're not as, and I don't want to use the word greedy, let's just say they might think, but either way, you're making money off of what you do. And even churches have an overhead. And I forget, and I don't know statistics today, but I remember reading an article like a year or two ago that almost 500 churches went out of business. I mean, went out of business, and I'm holding my quote fingers up, that they closed down. And then you would think, like, a church is not a business. A church going out of business, it just doesn't even connect, because people think of churches as this non-materialistic type of entity that's free of that kind of stress and overhead, which is absolutely not true. So if they don't have a following, they don't have a flock that follows, they can't afford to keep the doors open. The government, just like anything, is not going to say, well, it's okay, you're a church, let's let you get away with not paying your mortgage or your taxes or your electric bill. No, they come in, they say, hey, listen, either pay your bills or close down. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, so with that being said, the business side is so, so important, because without it, we can't continue to teach what we love and do what we do. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And I'd like us to, in this call, before we actually give the formula on how to find the lifetime value of a student, I really would like us to kind of talk about why it's important to know that number and what it does for your business prior to. Because I think if we just give the metrics and how to make it happen, and then, you know, without the understanding, without the why, then it just becomes a boring statistical talk on knowing your numbers. And
right,
there is a why we need to know the lifetime value of a student. I can remember the first time, and it was actually Professor Keith Hafner who revealed this to me. It just opened up the door to a world that I did not even know existed inside of my business, and understanding that was huge.
Right. So share that with us.
Well, you know, let's just take advertising, for instance. We cannot understand or actually know the exact amount of money that we can advertise to gain a new student if we don't know the exact number for the lifetime value of your student. Otherwise, you're just, you know, we've heard individuals say you just throw crap on the wall and see what sticks. Well, you have to pay for that crap that you're throwing, whether it sticks or not. And
right,
if you don't know how much you can afford to be throwing, which you shouldn't be throwing up the wall anyways, but if you don't know what you should be throwing up there and how much you should be spending on it, what you can even afford to spend on it, you have no idea, you know, whether you're wasting your money or not. And so that just in and of itself was a huge awakening for me, knowing that, you know, okay, I could spend X really to gain a new student, but I don't really need to spend that much. I should spend this much. There should be a percentage of the lifetime value, even though really, I mean, if you have pretty good retention and you keep them more than 1 year, you will make money on your second year. Of course, you don't want to make money on your second year. You want to make money right in your first year on,
right,
on those students. That way you can keep the door open. But there's a percentage of the lifetime value that you could, you know, reasonably spend on gaining a new student. And it goes back to what we had talked about before. We always, I guess, come back to this, you don't know what you don't know. And
right,
I didn't even know that I was supposed to know that. So coming to the understanding that, okay, a part of your business that you need to know, and why you need to know it was enlightening in and of itself, but then getting the actual metrics and understanding what, you know, how that played into my business was so much was so much
right,
more eye-opening. So not only do you get to figure out, you know, how much you can spend on that student, but then that helps you to also understand, you know, where your where your net income is going to come from, you know, the percentage that you actually are going to make from a student, as opposed to, I mean, everybody talks about, well, yeah, we gross this much, we gross this much, and we've talked about in our calls before that it, you know, gross is great, but it really comes down to the net, and some schools could be grossing less than other schools and actually netting more.
Right. Yeah, well, of course, no doubt. So let's first recap a few things. So number one is that you're saying, and I agree with you 1,000%, that it's not about looking at people as dollar signs, but it's about the integrity of what you do. And that old saying is, you know, you give better quality and you make sure that you worry about the client and the client will take care of you. It's only probably about 75% true. That is the bulk of what, you know, to have ultimate in customer service. My motto is the threefold system: the highest in quality, high profit, and low stress. Those are the three things we should look for when running our martial arts school. High quality, of course, giving the students the best service and having the best facility and being able to run the best classes. High profit, like you had just said, it doesn't matter. I had a school that had a 1,200 square foot facility. They were grossing only, and I want to say only, but it's a lot, $28,000 a month, but their overhead was like $4,000. So you're looking at a huge amount, $20,000 plus profit, $24,000 profit per month. That's massive, right? So, you know, or you can have a different model where you have a 35,000 square foot facility, 35 employees, and you're only making $5,000 a month. So it really all depends on the model that you want, and that's important, is to think about what model that you want. Sometimes less is more. The other thing about what you said, which is so important, is that, you know, when we look at our students, we should not necessarily look at them as dollar signs that sounds cheap and you know, like we're not really caring about the client. But I know you never felt like, you know, just like that. But that was how you micromanage your business. 100 students at $100, that's $10,000 a month. And is this one coming? Is this one paying? You have to do that, you know, because if you don't, most people run their businesses not knowing anything about what's going on, like almost like they're lotto players. You know, they buy a ticket every week hoping for the best. My dad did that for, you know, 60 years of his life, promising me for 60 years of his life that he was going to win lotto and let me retire. And my poor dad passed away in 77 years old, broke. I bailed him out of bankruptcy twice, loved the man to death, but was a terrible businessman, terrible saver, an overspender. Credit cards ruled his life. And, you know, he was always hoping that lotto would be his savior. Sometimes we run our businesses that way, going like, man, you know, like, let's see. I hope we have a good month this month. And I wonder, they don't even know how much money they're making, how much their expenses are, how much their profit cost, you know, versus expenses is, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of even goes to once I understood this and I understood direct response marketing, which is a totally different subject, but plays into it, of course, because then you know your, you know, cost for acquisition.
Right.
I was approached by a radio station that wanted me to, of course, sign a 6-month lease and or 6-month radio advertising with them, and I guess that would be a 6-month lease, right? So anyway,
right.
I said, you know what, I have no problem doing that, but if you say that you're going to reach this many people and that it's going to be this effective, I said, I'd like to pay you more money. And they
right.
kind of just sat back, and she's like, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, I'd like to give you, I'd like to pay you for each conversion that happens. So everybody that I turn over as a student that pays me the $169 up front for their first month, I'm just going to give you that money. But I don't
right.
want to pay, I don't want to pay anything else for the advertising.
Right.
But if you say, you know, if this is going to work, if this is going to work like you say it's going to work, you're going to make more money in the end. And we're both
right.
be happier because, you know, I know it's working. I'm paying a little bit more, but I'm assured that, you know, it's gonna turn over. And of course, they didn't accept that. They wouldn't
no.
do that. But I just wanted to throw that out there that when you know your numbers and you know what you can afford to pay, I know that I could afford to pay that, especially on a conversion.
Right. Right. Yeah. You still there?
So. Yeah, I'm here. So is there any, like on your end, is there anything else with regards to lifetime value of a student before we actually give, you know, the metrics and how to do this, the formula?
Well, And you know what? You know, you wrote some things down that we should follow. You know, you wrote the lifetime value of a student is, you know, this is how much money you stand to gross each time a student enrolls. And then the way you broke it down, you know, let's say 2012, the gross income was $325,000. It includes all income from all sources, right? That means that you're factoring in promotions if you charge for them, parents' night outs, drink sales, retail if you do it that way. And then you divide that out by whatever the students. So let's say you have 2012, you gross $325,000 total, and then you did a division of 125 students. The lifetime value of the student is calculated by dividing the gross income by the total new enrollments during that period, and then also the students that are training, right? That's the way you break it down.
Well, actually, I'd actually break it down for the the total new enrollments. I take that divided by the, so the 100. Let's say you know, in 2012, I enrolled 125 students, and
right.
I grossed, you know, 325,000 from all sources of income. The lifetime value of those students is you know, 260. And you're right. I mean, that's or 2,600. That's the students, all the students combined.
Right. So my thoughts, and this is where a lot of people make mistakes, and maybe even sometimes with us explaining this, it gets confusing. And I'll dumb it down because I'm really good at doing that for people, because I'm like the layman, contractor, landscaper, karate guy. You know, like I've always been in the dirt doing things, and just like I had a problem with one of my contractors just recently. He's driving me nuts. He did like seven jobs at my home, from the exterior to the roof, and we kept adding things on, and then, you know, decking and blah blah blah. So we had a bunch of different contracts, right? So my simplistic mind, especially with math, because I hate math, is just simple like this. Okay, I took five different contracts. They all, let's just say, were $100 each. So to me, that's $500. And I paid him $500. He's going, no, but you paid me $500. $200 went to that. $100 went to this. $300 went to that. I go, it doesn't matter. He's like, yeah, it does matter. I go, no, it doesn't, because I owed you $500. I paid you $500, right? But he just could not. He had to attach it to an invoice to make sure that invoice was paid. And I'm like, it's just mind-boggling how some people's math wraps up in this spider web. So here's the simplistic version. First off, we have to think about, let's say, the lifetime of a student. How long does an average student last? So in our industry, this standards was verified by John Graydon, Rob Colasante, guys that were industry leaders, that a student lasts anywhere between 18 and 24 months. That's the average student's length. So let's just pretend like our schools, yours and mine, we retain people a lot longer. So let's say they stay for 2 years, right? Let's just say on average, for argument's sake. So I have a student who pays $100 a month, $1,200 a year, times 2 years, that's $2,400. So that becomes their average just tuition basis. If I get them to spend another $10 a month on gear and special events, that's another $120 a year, times two, that's $240. That gets added into that amount, and that becomes their lifetime value. However, the one thing that I don't know if you mentioned, because I didn't read long enough on this, is that sometimes that we forget that for every student that recommends people, that adds to the value of the existing client. So if they recommend us one to two people over the lifetime of their 2 years, what is that value to us in advertising costs, because we didn't pay for it, and what does it get added on to the client? So let's say we add another $150 per referral that signed up onto their value, and now they become worth, let's say, $2,800. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And so for the listeners out there, it's simplistic if you do it in just 100 times 12, 12 months, 1,200 times 2 years, 2,400, extra retail, another 200, so that's 2,600, and maybe another $150 for one referral, so it's $2,600 and something dollars, let's just say. That is the value of that student. So how much, and here's the question that I've asked my clients, and check this out, Dwayne, I think we've talked about this, but I once had a client, and we analyzed a two-year period of time, and actually, they're still my clients, and they left and came back, and we've worked together, but we analyzed their 2 year period, their period of 2 years, and we found out how many people quit. They had about 250 people quit, about 280 people join. However, out of the 250 people that quit, normally people would just go, I lost 250 people, I should do better next year. But we dug deeper. And we analyzed where those 250 people were in rank and time period. We found that within the six-month period between white and white senior at this particular school was the majority, the bulk of almost 210 or 220 people quit at that rank. Then we went deeper. And we realized that it was mostly between 7 and 9 year olds, and then I believe it was like 12 and 14 year olds. That were the bulk that quit within that group. So basically, we could normally say, well, that's really good. We analyze it all. We know where our holes are. So what do? Most people do nothing. However, in this particular situation, I said, and I'm going to throw out my calculator at 100. Let's say it was 220 people lost times $100. That's $22,000 a year times 12 months. That's $264,000 in lost revenue. I said, why don't you hire someone and pay them $35,000 a year and just have them focus on that age group, just on that demographic? Like, oh, we can't afford it. I go, of course you can't afford it because you're not focused on it. If you would have saved these students, you'd be if you paid them $40,000 a year, you'd be $224,000 richer than you are now because you're losing them for some reason in that frame, in that time period. You have to focus on them. And if we did, it's like a concierge in a hotel making sure their guests are happy and having the ultimate experience, those students, at least a good majority of them would have stayed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that certainly does. Yeah, and you know, and maybe it's not 35,000, but maybe it's 25,000. But still, they would
exactly.
I mean, there would have been a percentage of them that would have stayed.
And one guy I really give a lot of credit to is Randy Holman. I haven't heard much from Randy because him and I haven't spoken in a while, but I'll mention his name. Always a really genius business owner and school owner, has like 1,000 students in one location. Again, I haven't talked to him in quite some time. He might even be doing better than that now. However, what I love that he did one time we had a conversation is he would give and assign an instructor with a certain block of students. So let's say one instructor was focused on 3 to 5 year old beginners. And it was his job to teach them and pass them through to the next grade, which was the next instructor, 3 to 5 year old intermediates. And they would base the quality of that class and everything that instructor did. And he was in charge of motivational cards, we miss you letters, testing, talking and communicating with the parents for those 20-some-odd students or 40-some-odd students. And they were able to base his performance based on whether the graduation rate into the second tier, which was, let's say, the yellow belt. And then
right.
That's how it worked through the ranks. And he would say, okay, well, and everyone knew that there were certain sticking points. So let's say at middle range, blue belt level, there was another sticking point. Well, that blue belt instructor knew what those sticking points were, and he would focus on them. Right? So it was it's a little bit different of a dynamic, but they had amazing retention and graduation ratios.
Yeah, and that's just, you know, knowing your numbers, but then doing something about it. I mean, fixing those broken windows.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, making sure that everything is not just known about, but done something about, right? So I watch
Go
ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you watch Bar Rescue? We've talked about it. You know, I'm a reality TV junkie, but for business shows.
Yeah, no, I've seen it a few times.
Last night they had an episode of him going back for the first time to a bar that he rescued that 3 years later was re-destroyed again by the owner. And he went back in. He was going to drop $100,000 into the renovation of this new business, but he found that there's nothing he could do that this owner would just run it back into the ground again. And the guy, the last time the guy built the business, he had 400% in increase in business over the course of like a year, and then they just let it go downhill. He paid off all his debt. He was happy he was making money, but he didn't reinvest into the company. The place smelled. People weren't cleaning. Everything was disgusting, and then they, of course, started to lose clients again. So interestingly enough, it's really all about whether we do what we're supposed to do within our schools.
Yeah, you can't run a school and set it and forget it. I mean, you have to reanalyze, you have to reinvent. I mean, you can't do that.
Right.
Yeah, you just can't. It's even, so, you know, you see it. I mean, you look at, we talked about, I don't know if it was last call or the call before, we even talked about McDonald's, how, you know, this whole month they're doing that, showing love, you know, and you might be picked when you go to pay your bill, and they may say to you, and you know, look, if you just call your mom up and say that you love her, we'll cover the cost of your bill. And
that's awesome.
The biggest reason, yeah, and one of the reasons they're doing that is they're trying to get millennials back, the millennium culture back in, because that's one of the areas that they aren't getting repeat business from like they should be. And they know that because they know their numbers, but not only do they know them, now they're trying to do something to fix that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? It's interesting because and by the way, we're not mentioning the whole psychological perspective of what they're doing. They're not just trying to get these millennials in, but they're trying to concrete in an anchor that McDonald's is all about love. You know, it's all about family and it's all about that stuff. It's interesting.
Well, what they did is they took a spin on their jingle, you know, I'm loving it. And it was, I'm loving it. You know, the whole focus of I'm loving it was I'm loving the food, the taste. And now it's, you know, I'm loving other people. And so they just did a spin on, you know, the I'm loving it.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, I love it. I mean, I love it. I love the concept of it. However, I hate McDonald's, but that's another thing altogether. I think that with that type of marketing, you know, like you said, it's all about connecting, right? So that's where – you know, they're creating and making a bigger connection to other than just a junk food or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yep, exactly. And they're taking the attention away from the bad food. But anyhow.
So going back to your value, and you wrote down, you know, so the lifetime value of a student is calculated by dividing out the gross income by the total new enrollments during that given period. In the case, we divide 325,000 by 150, and we get our lifetime value. So it's the total number of students in your school, new students, old students, divided out over the gross income, basically saying, I made X amount of dollars on my clientele, right? I have 100 students. I made 100,000. Each student is worth $1,000, that kind of thing. You know, whatever the value divided out by the total gross income, by the total number of students for the year that contributed to that gross. Of course, you add in, you know, all the retail, all the drinks, and all the other things that you charge for, that becomes part of your gross. Am I right?
And it, certainly. And then the other thing is, though, too, is to, in order to get an accurate lifetime value of your student, it's important to even go farther than a year. It would be more important to do a 2-year period. That's going to give you a more accurate account. And then, you know, once you start this, of course, you're not going to have a 2-year period probably. You may not even have the statistics to go back and look at the following year. But after this year is over and once you've started it, then you just start building. And then you have a five-year look at the lifetime value so that you can kind of gauge where you're at with that. But not knowing, like I said, let me go back, not knowing the actual value of a student, you have no idea what you can afford to pay. So, you know, like we have in this demo here, in 2012, we came up with that, you know, really, you your lifetime value of a student is $2,600. So theoretically, you could pay up to $2,600 to get a student. Now, we don't have to do that, nor should we. You know, I don't recommend doing that, but 10% of that to get 90%, you know, spending $260 to get that $2,600, that's not unreasonable. And that's where, you know, knowing this number will allow you to then go back and go, okay, I know that I can spend up to this amount of money to get this. And you won't even spend, if you're marketing correctly, you won't even spend 10% of that, which is nice.
Right. Well, you know, that's the thing, too. And by the way, one thing that you did bring out is knowing your numbers also gives you strength and power, right? Because if I don't know, I always live from what – and by the way, I want to recommend a movie to everybody. You could actually watch it on YouTube, and the movie is called Thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E. Yes, in parts, it's kind of outlandish and a little bit conspiracy theory and, you know, aliens and things like that. But watch it because it talks about – the flow of money and basically Thrive, the name of the movie, is where most societies believe that they live from scarcity, in fear. There's not enough food, there's not enough oil, there's not enough money, the economy, the downturn, war, all those things, they influence our opinions. So, in other words, going back, and this is not an outlandish kind of a segue, but basically what I'm saying is like if we do not know our numbers and we're not sure what a value of a student is and that equates to how much money we could market with, we might say, I can't afford this. I can't put money into my school. I can't advertise. I can't take an ad in the paper because you're unsure. So with that clarity gives you confidence and power so that you're able to say, yeah, for every student that comes through the door, it cost me $150 to market to them, to sign them up, to enroll them with their free uniform. My total cost of every brand new person is $250. Well, even if it's just a lifetime of a year and it's $100 a month, that's $1,200 a year, we've made $950 profit on that particular person. So that means we can afford to put more money into them, you know, to give them things and send them gifts and call them and spend time with them and give them free private lessons and really up the ante or ante when we have customer service. Does that sound real?
It perfectly does. And there are some other metrics that we're not going to talk about in this call that actually play into that. But this is like the base. This is the starter for everybody. If you're not calculating the lifetime value of your student or of a student, you should start that this year. It's just liberating.
It certainly is, and that, it's that clarity, and that will give you that confidence to be able to grow and build and do more and be better at what you do. So I love the fact that you broke it down, and then, you know, one thing, too, you know, you wrote that this means, and this isn't probably the most important thing you wrote on this paper, although everything is important, you wrote, this means that each time we enroll a student, we potentially gross $2,800. But I want to rewind a little. So that means that every time we don't enroll a student, that we're potentially losing $2,800, right? We're not losing a $100 a month student. No, we're losing the potential of a lifetime value. So even if they last 2 years or a year, we're not losing $100 a month. We're losing $2,800 for the 2 year period, or $1,200 for the year if we're charging $100 a month only. So that will give you a little bit more of a thought process as to how far you will go to continue woeing or wowing or, you know, dating that student before they become a client. Will you do those extra calls? Will you call up ahead of time? Will you mail them a rose when, you know, on their way in? You know what I mean? Like, what can you do? Like, Dwayne, when you were at my school, I think I talked about the waters that we do. For every new client, we made this really cool label, and I think we talked about this on one of our calls. It's just a simple label that tapes over the top of the water label, because I don't want to remove the water label from so-and-so water company. So all I do is basically made a custom label called Ninja Water, and I tape it. My daughter, she tapes like cases of them over the top, and when someone comes in, we say, hey, it's great to have you here. Here's our complimentary water. One, it creates people to want to buy water from my school if they join afterwards, but two, they feel like we're totally at home. They're like, wow, that's kind of nice of you. Water, sitting at the beautiful tables, treating me well, the environment, because we will do whatever we can, because that lifetime value of a student, potential value, is super important to us.
Absolutely. I would go into my insurance agency and they always ask me that. I've been a customer there for probably 13, 14 years, whatever it's been, and they still ask me. I'm like, no, I'm good. You know, cup of coffee, you know, whatever. I mean, they're, you know, and it's that extra step. And I did adopt I don't have Ninja Water, but I do have water with our labels on it, just because I don't teach jiu-jitsu, obviously.
We call Ninja Water. You know, anybody could call it Ninja Water because it's just ninjas are cool, right?
That is true.
Whatever you do, you know, it's TriStar Martial Art, you know, Academy water, you know. Anyway, whatever it is, it's just a cool thing. And and you know what? Listen, they drink it and throw it in the garbage. The label gets wasted. It's okay. It's all just part of the branding and that experience, that Disney experience. So, again, lifetime value of the student, referral value of the student, why a student is so valuable because they refer people. Secondly is what perspective value of a student is, should change your mindset and say, what will I do? How far will I go to sign this client up? Because no matter whether you sign them up or not, you've already paid for them, right? So maybe point that out as well. So for those who are listening, every single person who walks through the door somehow became a client or walked through the door potentially because you marketed, you YouTubed, you Facebooked, you referred, you had a friend, you had a good student that told them about it, the sign on the outside of the building. All of that stuff cost money and is something that we need to remember. So if they walk through and don't sign up, we potentially just raised our cost per student value as well and marketing.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, with regards to knowing your numbers, with the whole lifetime value of a student, there you have direction and then you have destination. And we should all have the goal or destination of our school in mind, where we want to take it. But we have to be careful that if we don't understand the numbers that go along with getting us to that destination, we might be going into the wrong direction. And so I guess what I mean by that is, I live about 60 miles south of Chicago. There is a interstate highway called Interstate 57 that in order to get to Chicago, I got to hop on going north to get to Chicago. Now, I can get on the correct road, but if I get on the correct road and I head south, I'm going in the wrong direction. Now, my destination may still be to go to Chicago, but the problem is that, I've got on I got on the correct highway, but I'm going in the wrong direction. And so knowing these numbers is going to help you get on the correct highway to begin with in order to then make the decision on which direction you need to go to get to your destination, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely, without a doubt. We call that our MAP, right, our Massive Action mm-hmm. Plan, and, knowing what we want and what our goals are, and not just knowing, because I'm going over this MAP goal setting thing with my students for a leadership team and instructor training. And even though that they want to set the goal, they set it, but it's only nothing more than a dream until they make it happen. And they don't know the execution gap between the dream and the actual doing is massive for most people. Like, I want to lose weight. I got to go to the gym. I'll join a gym. Then they don't go to the gym because they never cleared their schedule, set up the times, never did any of that stuff. Or then they do go to the gym, but they never lose weight because they haven't changed their diet. So there's got to be a massive action plan, some sort of goal that will help them achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we need to have as our school owners. And we can't, we can't have that without the lifetime value of the student.
Right, exactly. Well, that's awesome. It's a great call. I think that for those listening, to them that to the people who know this, it might just be, common sense. But to majority of people, even successful business owners, they could stand to look at their stuff and micromanage it a little more. Because, for example, I just saved money on my cable bill. And I do it every year. I call up and say, hey, listen, someone made me a better offer. You do for me. And I saved between my two cable bills at my two businesses and my home. And I saved on all three of those. I saved like $30 a pop. That's $100, $90 a month. But $100 a month, I saved $1,200 a year. That's money I could put in my daughter's college fund only because I was micromanaging my numbers.
Yep.
Super important. But all right, awesome. I think that's a pretty good call, Dwayne. What do you think? Any last-minute closings?
No, although I will say that we are going to put just a PDF file on this call so that you can kind of download and see the numbers that we were talking about. I know sometimes it's hard when somebody is just spewing out numbers and trying to break it down orally. It might be easier for you to see it. So that'll be on there so you can calculate it yourself.
Okay, awesome. I look forward to it. And please, guys and ladies and gentlemen that are listening, refer us, share this call with your other peers, share it with your staff too, because it's good for the staff to know this stuff because that's how your business grows. And please help get the word out there. Dwayne and I are really just trying to help the industry. I'm kind of frustrated with the way the industry is going, where people are just trying to sell the next bright, shiny object. My ultimate goal is to help everybody, traditionalists and non-traditionalists alike, but I don't want people to lose the martial arts. To me, that's super important. So anyway, that's really it.
All right. Well, everybody have a great day. Thanks, Allie.
All right, Dwayne. We'll talk to you soon. Everybody have a great day.